Production. Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Hello, folks. I'm Lynn, and as always, I'm your host for Talking Twilight Zone. And I am here with my wonderful co-host, Bobby Neer, Robert, and Dave. Dave is back. Oh, yes. Hallelujah. Dave is back. Yes. We missed you so much, and we're glad you're back. You had a short hiatus, had some other projects, wonderful projects going on, other talk show shows, and now he's back with us today, and that's great.
So then I was wondering, there was this three of us in this room. Where's that fourth person come from?
I know.
It must be an alien.
The Phantom Dave. Yes.
Which one's the Martian?
Are you who you claim to be? I
know. Yeah, only three on the bus, but there are four in here.
Well, it's getting close to the holiday season, so I hope everyone's getting their preparations in order. I'm going to start wrapping my Christmas gifts this weekend, which is one of my least favorite holiday chores. I love buying and giving gifts, but I hate wrapping them. And I worship the person who invented gift bags. I love gift bags. Robert, you wrapped your gifts, or does your lovely wife get that honor?
Now, sometimes I do, and then sometimes for the convenience of the hustle and bustle of today's world, there are people that if you plug a dollar or two, they'll wrap your gift.
Them for you, the good old gift wrappers. Yeah, you don't see them as much as you used to, but they are good to have around. But gift bags, yes, that person was wonderful who invented those. But anyway, that being said, today's episode is titled, Will the Real Martian Please Stand Up? And I'm going to turn it over to Robert for that opening clip.
Okay.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Wintry February night to present. Order of events, a phone call from a frightened woman, notating the arrival of an unidentified flying object. Then the checkout you've just witnessed with two state troopers verifying the event. But with nothing more enlightening to add beyond evidence of some tracks leading across the highway to a diner. You've heard of trying to find a needle in a haystack? Well, stay with us now, and you'll be part of an investigating team whose mission is not to find that proverbial needle. No, their task is even harder. They've got to find a Martian in a diner. And in just a moment, you'll search with them because you've just landed in the Twilight Zone.
Just landed in the Twilight Zone. Yes, well, the real Martian...
The big crack investigating investigators. Yeah, there's two highway patrolmen.
That's
I'm excited.
Right. The crack team, Starsky and Hutch of the 1960s. Will the real Martian please stand up? That begins with those two crack highway state troopers following up on a report of a UFO sighting, and this UFO apparently knocked off the tops of trees before submerging into a pond. So they find these footprints leading from the pond to a nearby diner called the Highway Cafe. And the troopers go into the diner hoping to find the invader from outer space. Now, there's eight customers. There are eight customers in the diner. One's a bus driver, and seven are claiming to have been passengers on the bus. And this bus stopped at the diner to wait out the snowstorm and to hear if the old bridge that they have to cross is safe after it's checked out. You know, that's apparently one of these rickety old bridges or something. And the troopers, they start to question the people after the driver swears he only had six passengers, not seven. Now, one passenger shouldn't be there, should they? And suddenly, everyone becomes suspicious of everyone else. Even married couples are looking suspiciously at their spouses, especially after the jukebox starts playing on its own and lights start going on and off. And finally, the troopers, they can't hold them any longer, you know, just on suspicion. No one can, you know, prove that they're an alien or not an alien. So they finally, the county engineer calls the diner and says, well, the bridge is safe to cross. So everyone's allowed to leave and get back on the bus, and the trooper said that they will lead the way in their patrol car. An hour later, one of the passengers named Mr. Ross walks back into the diner and informs the owner, Mr. Haley, that the bridge collapsed and the bus and the patrol car and everyone plunged into the river and only he got out alive. So Mr. Haley's a little suspicious of this. He says, you know, you're not even wet, and you know what happened to you? And Ross says, what's wet? What's wet? He doesn't even know what the word wet means. So, you know, that raises Haley's eyebrows. But then, you know, using three arms to light his cigarette, Ross informs Haley that he's a Martian. And he's waiting for his friends to arrive so they can begin to colonize on Earth. So Haley then informs Ross that Earth is a wonderful place to colonize and that he's from Venus. And he then tells him that he's also waiting for friends who have intercepted the Martians. He then removes his cap to reveal a third eye in the middle of his forehead. Okay, this is definitely one of the more memorable TV episodes. That's a given. I like this episode a lot. You have a combination of mystery, humor, and intrigue. The first time I saw this episode many, many years ago, I actually thought the blonde dancer was the alien. You know, that innocent, gee, I left my identification on the bus or I sent it ahead. That nonsense made me sure it was her. However, you know, I was probably in my mid-teens at the time, so I was not yet able to distinguish between the obvious and not-so-obvious clues. To me, Ross seemed the most unlikely suspect, but little did I know how the mind of the master worked. But I do have to wonder, and I know it was a different time period, but really, who leaves to go on a trip of any kind and sends their wallet with their identification in it ahead with their luggage? How was she paying for food and coffee at the diner? I mean, she may have kept some money with her, but it just seems very unlikely that anybody would send their wallet and identification ahead with their luggage and leave nothing with themselves. I don't know. But anyway, that being said, I thought Jack Elam was the best part of this episode. Now, some people may not know this, but he was chosen for this role because of his natural looks. He wore little to no makeup for the role. He already had uneven and discolored teeth, a bumpy nose, salt and pepper hair that was receding, and those protruding eyes. And he was blind in his left eye, which was the result of a childhood fight. So Rod's main reason for casting him was to add a little mystery and make him the main suspect for the alien. Now, one other note of interest is that many of the props from the diner in 100 Yards Over the Rim, remember that one, the one with Cliff Robertson, 100 Yards Over the Rim, they were used for this episode, that diner, including the jukebox and some of the signs in the background. But, no, this is a wonderful episode. I think Robert mentioned in his review that there's a little bit of paranoia, the same like we saw in Monsters to Do on Maple Street, and that's true.
Yep.
I mean, suddenly, I mean, suddenly everyone notices the little idiosyncrasies in everyone else. Wasn't it the younger couple, the woman says, I thought you had a mole on your chin. You know, and the guy says, I never had a mole on my chin, you know. And then the older wife, wasn't she looking at the at her husband like that Bill Irwin? She was looking at him like, you know, she didn't know him. I mean, I don't know, but it was, you know, you're right. I mean, those little idiosyncrasies. But
he had Jack
urging
it on the counter, sitting there cracking them bad jokes.
Exactly. So you don't know her. She don't know him. They don't know each other. He was great, wasn't he? he's a regular Ray Bradbury. He's science fiction. But, you know, it turns out that the man most people least suspected was the alien. I mean, Ross was a pain in the butt. You know, he was bossing everybody around, but, you know, he just sounded so believable. I have a meeting in Boston, you know, so you just didn't expect him. But, you know, the ending with the three hands was priceless, and it was good stuff. And Barney Phillips, he's appeared in, what, four Twilight Zone episodes, and he's one of the best character actors of our time. I mean, it was a good episode. with a nice Twilight Zone feel to it. I can't rate it as a classic because it did drag a little bit in the middle, but I can rate it as excellent. So my rating's a 4 for excellent. So, and hello, Felix. Felix is here. Nice to see you, Felix. Thank you, and glad you could make it today. And I'm going to turn this over now to Robert.
Okay, thank you, Lynn. Yeah, we also get a little product placement during that time for Oasis as well, if you notice the end where the Martian was smoking a cigarette and clearly showing the Oasis sign on.
Oh,
the,
yeah, League of
the
Admirers,
cigarette.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. So, shameless product placing, which we get a lot of today.
The sponsor got their digs in, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to go over too much with my review because pretty much early on when I first joined up, most of my reviews I pretty much outlined the story itself. But you know, we pretty much all know, and even what Lynn just said. One of the things that this turned out to be was a mystery wrapped up into a little bit of comic humor, pretty much. And we have the troopers, which if you notice, the main one talking on his walkie-talkie didn't give a breath. So I would imagine with the snow on the ground and supposedly ice on the bridge and all this stuff that it's probably would be about 20-some degrees. And one of the comments that I made, well, you know what? They should have cooled down the studio to at least give the realism of them actually being out in the cold because
it
must have
been
a warm
winter. Yeah, it didn't
seem
that cold, did it? It didn't seem that cold, did it?
Mm-mm. Yeah, they didn't give off no breaths because, you know, even in 30-degree or 40-degree weather, you still see. I mean, that's just a little thing, but to add realism to it would have been kind of nice. So, like I said, this is kind of like in the ways of future mystery shows like Ellie Queen and Columbo and Murder, She Wrote and all of them where, you know, we try to eliminate the group to come up with the suspect. But in this one, you know, John Hoyt was just excellent as hiding, except for the one giveaway that he gives when he moves his hand only this one time to activate the jukebox.
Oh, when he waved it, yeah, the bus driver. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and then you have the sugar bowls exploding and onward like that. So it would be very hard to try to pick the alien out because, I mean, you know, Lynn said, and I said in my review, you know, the monsters are due on Maple Street, but it's in reverse. You got an alien trying to act like human among everybody else. Now, like I said, the whole thing could have been revealed, and it would have made for a short story if they would have had the waiter take his hat off, because that would be very obvious. But then that would be kind of a diversion because then, you know, the real alien could get away because, you know, actually the story shows two aliens. You just don't know until, you know, the end. So, and that would have been the story too quickly. So they had to do what they did. Do the whole, questioning, you know, I had six passengers, but you got seven and so on like that. Jack Elm, of course, a wonderful actor. A lot of people remember him in Westerns and other films, but he's also played the bad guy in Westerns, if you remember. So it's kind of
He was in a lot of Westerns. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah, he's you know, kind of a different role for him as being the comic. You might as well call him the comic relief in here because I mean the lines were terrible, but you know it does put a smile on your face when you. You know, you have the old coot over there, you know, eating his chili and drinking his 14 cups of coffee, which I think he was trying to advertise for Sanka. Sanka was still around on Mackerel
House. I thought that was funny. I thought that was very funny at the end. You had 14 cups of coffee. I'm like, oh, my God, this guy. No wonder he was so, like, wound up in all that caffeine. He was like,
he must have got free refills. I mean, what was coffee then, about a dime or something like
that? Had a dime, I guess, a nickel or a dime, yeah. his 14 cups of coffee. He was so wound up with all that caffeine. And the thing that got me was he mentioned it's a regular Ray Bradbury. And you know, Ray Bradbury did do some writing for Serling. Or actually,
yeah,
no, I shouldn't say that. He adapted some of the stories, didn't he?
Well, yeah, he did. The line he actually quotes in here is, she's just like science fiction. That's what she is, a regular Ray Bradbury.
Ray Bradbury, yeah.
Yeah. So that was kind of a nice little plug for him.
That was, because he did have, you know, connections with Serling, yeah.
Yeah. And in the last scene, talking about where the bus driver gets the phone, Sheriff or Jeopardy gets the phone and finds out that they said the county coroner, you know, the person that's in charge of the road work said the bridge was okay. And come to find out that the, you know, the bus driver, premonition-wise, thought it wasn't safe, and he was right, because when we get the reveal of the alien coming in and he's not wet, which pretty much tells you that he probably, before the bus went in, transported himself out of it, and that's why he wasn't wet. Now, the thing was also, too, that kind of leads you into, at the beginning, where they said that the person or the craft that went into the pond and walked out of the pond. Now, evidently, at the beginning, he wasn't wet neither. So also, that's how, you know, John Hoyt character could fit in with the rest of them, because,
yeah,
you know, he was dry. He wasn't wet. And I mean, that's the second occurrence of that mention. So, but
very,
that's why,
strange,
I think,
though. It was very strange,
yeah,
though, that, you know, he says, what is wet? He seemed to have, you know, a basic understanding of everything else going on around him, and he didn't know what the word wet meant. You know, it's like, you know, I have a meeting in Boston, and, you know, talking about, he just was talking about everything that he could possibly relate to the planet Earth, and yet he didn't know what the word wet meant. It just was kind of strange, didn't you think?
Yeah, it was. And at least if he's from Mars, they do have frozen water, if my understanding is correct. So, you know, even wetter water would be associated.
No,
but
it's
frozen
methane on Mars.
Oh, is it okay? I thought it was ice particles,
yep,
which could be converted into water. But
no,
it okay.
acts like water, but...
Oh, okay.
There may be some at the extreme north and south poles.
Maybe he didn't know what wet meant. That's strange, yeah.
Well, maybe I was thinking the waters of Mars there, Dave. But anyway.
It's interesting because he knew, you know, coffee. He was drinking coffee, and it just seemed a little weird, but, you know. I guess that.
And then I like the evil laugh at the end, which was kind of cool. Where,
ooh, Barney Phillips,
the Venus guy from Venus. Yeah.
Yeah, that was excellent. That was.
But
excellent.
Also, if you listen to the end where Rod gives his conclusion, you hear the spacecraft in the background as the episode ends. So could that be the coming invasion force
that they were talking about
at the end?
The Venusians. That was the Venusians.
Yeah. So. But one, like I said, the one mistake I already mentioned was it should have been more colder, and that would have given a little more realism. But
yeah, you're right.
The story was pretty much a precursor to movies like Men in Black and other invasion stories, like what we have going on with Fringe at the time, which is not really an alien world, but actually an alternate world. And First Wave, which was a series that ran, I believe, in the 90s, ran for 3 seasons about alien invasions. You have the Invaders, Roy Thins, way back in the 60s, 50s, 60s, something like that. So, you know, it's pretty much what this episode, I mean, it was a good episode, not a classic one, I wouldn't give it. But one of the things I mentioned was the Men in Black situation. So I'm going to throw a clip from Men in Black 2.
Hey. 20 Mugrats, please.
Elizabeth, the United States Postal Service hasn't quite kept up with today's youth, but I can offer you some nice Berlin airlisting.
No.
Opera legend?
No.
American Samoa?
No.
Amish quilt?
Hey, sweetie, I'm sorry. Got a world to save here. There was no coma. It was all a cover.
Who are you?
question is, who are you?
I'm the postmaster of Truro, Massachusetts, and I'm ordering you to leave these premises.
Okay.
Sadika? All right, people, we have a breach. Farrell, cordon off this area. Billings, I'll have a full perimeter wipe down right here, right now.
Okay.
Farrell, get him off and escort all non-essential civilian personnel from this side immediately.
Yes, sir.
Listen to yourself, Kay. Who talks like that? Why do you think you're so comfortable here? Just about everybody works in a post office as an alien.
Yeah, I always wondered that myself when I go in and send some letters. The one behind the counter. I know he's got that third hand somewhere.
That was really done well, wasn't it?
Yeah, I love that reveal where the workers were revealing themselves as aliens in that scene, which was kind of cool. And trying to reveal to Kay, because Kay wanted to fit back into society, which, you know, didn't quite work out the way he wanted, because the second one he had to be brought back to help. But Men in Black, it reminded me of that. And also a 1970s series called Elwe Queen with David Wayne.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah. I loved how, I think it was Jim Hudson, who played Ellery, would talk to the audience when he would come up with a clue. And David Wayne played the inspector. It was set during, I believe, the 1930s era.
Yeah.
But it was also based on some Ellery Queen books. So I'll go ahead and play the beginning music of it and then a little bit of the clip from Ellery Queen.
I just heated up some coffee. I hope it's today's, or even this week's. Well, Sam's in, Joe's out. That ought to make you happy.
Why wasn't Sam poisoned when he drank from the swill bottle?
That's simple. He didn't. He was lying. Talk about swill. I'm afraid Flanagan's beat us to the punch on this one.
I don't know, dear. I don't know. It just doesn't make any sense.
Want me to take Sam out and put Joe back in? Pass the milk, will you?
See, for a premeditated murder, there's just too much left to chance.
Oh, not at all. Sam dropped the poison in the bottle, waited for his opportunity, forced Hogan to drink it. What are you staring at me for?
The milk.
Well, what about it? Is it sour?
No. Don't you realize what you did with it?
Yeah, just poured it in my cup.
Yeah, but how?
Like this. How would you do it?
Same way. That's my point.
What? Now I know who didn't kill Kid Hogan. Who didn't kill him?
I also know who did kill Kid Hogan. Now, Flanagan's picture and the way my dad pours milk in the coffee gave me the answer. Was it Joe Adams? Was it Sam Hatter? Was it Doc Sanford or Melinda Sanford? Or Eddie? Or was it somebody else? Now, bear in mind that the timing has a lot to do with it. Yeah, I'll tell you more about it at the gym.
And that's where he breaks the fourth wall and tells you what he's thinking, which was a pretty good series, Elwe Queen. But
I forgot about that series. I'm glad you reminded
me. Now, since he can figure all this out, you got two troopers that can't figure out an alien in a crowd. So.
A couple of rocks.
3 out of 5. I give out it. Yeah.
3 out of 5. Okay.
I'll pass over to Bobby. Bobby?
All righty. Thank you, Robert. I won't bother to rehash everything either because the details of this episode have been done to death, to put it mildly. But I do have a couple questions about it. I'll get to that in a minute, as I do with all of the episodes that we do. I went to IMDb And it gets an 8.5 rating over there, which is very high. And the reviews that are there, they're all positive. There are no negative reviews. There are two reviews from professional critics by professional. I mean, they have their own websites. And one of them liked this story, but he said it was an entertaining story, but not particularly memorable. And I found that interesting. I've seen this episode now twice in the past 24 hours. I watched it yesterday with Lynn, and I watched it this morning by myself. And the one thing that makes me wonder is why it has everything in it to be a classic episode, but it is not. So obviously something is missing in it, because I gave it a 3, and Robert gave it a 3, and Lynn gave it a 4. And as has already been said on this show, people have said, I wouldn't go as far as being a classic story. Now, in my review on the board, I indicated that I thought it was too short, and it didn't set up any real fear. Before you start to get scared about there being an alien, the story's already over. I don't think you can do that in 22, 23 minutes. This is one of those stories I think would have been better as an hour-long episode. And I also don't like the tongue-in-cheek aspect of it. I cannot get around that. Every time the Twilight Zone does a funny episode, not that this is funny, but tries to inject a little humor, it just doesn't work for me. As has already been said also, this is just basically a rehash of Monsters Who Do on Maple Street. But Monsters Who Do on Maple Street got almost universal classic ratings because it's a deadly serious story. A man gets shot and killed in it. At the end of it, the whole neighborhood is there. People are shooting at each other, and it's a very, very serious story. There isn't a bit of humor in any of it. Here, there's just too much of that. The people in the diner seem to be concerned, but not as concerned as I would expect people to be if they think that a spaceship is landing. One of the most ridiculous parts of it is at the beginning when the two state troopers are told that something has landed in the lake, and it appears the aliens have gotten out of the spaceship and gone into a diner. They act like it's just a routine call. I mean, they don't ask for any backup. They don't seem to be at least bit worried about it. And you can imagine if that really happened in real life, what an uproar there would be if anybody had any proof that such a thing had happened. So the comedy kind of starts right there, and it continues through the episode. I just think that it hurts it. Now, Lynn has said, and Robert has said, that they thought it dragged a little bit in the middle. And I want to ask Robert, why did you give it a 3? Why no higher?
Well, reason why, because to me, I mean, it's a good story. It's better than an average, but not as well as an excellent. And I think it has to do with pretty much, you know, we're trying to solve a mystery. But to keep it from going stale or boring, let's throw Jack in there to throw a few lines, terrible lines of that here and there, except for the Ray Bradbury line. I did like that. I just feel that it wasn't a quality classic just because of the story itself. It had just too many holes in it. And, you know, your troopers are almost bubbling troopers, you know.
Well, that's what I said. Yeah, they don't seem to be the least bit concerned that something that has never happened in history has suddenly
And
where's
National Guards out? You would have a full force out for this.
They don't ask for any backup at all.
Yeah.
They just say, okay, we'll go to the diner and find out what's there. Well, how do they know what's there? There might be an alien with space guns or some weapons. So they just kind of walk right into it.
They really didn't investigate the spaceship any further. I mean, it's supposedly submerged into the lake. They're at the diner, and it's like, well, you know, I guess if we can't find anybody, then that's that. It doesn't show them doing any further investigation.
Well, the reason why I said I think it would have been better, you might say if it's an hour-long episode, it drags even more. But I think that in a story like this, you need time to develop some suspense. You need time to start to wonder, is it this one, is it that one? This looks hurried. It just looks like the story begins, and it's over before I've had a chance to digest anything that's happening in it. And I think that really hurts it right there. It just, I don't so mind so much the attempted humor. I generally don't like it in Twilight Zone. But I just think it was just a little bit too hurried to develop anything. You don't get to really know these characters or to suspect any of them. If you throw them all in a pool and you say, well, they're all under suspicion, it could be almost anybody. That really comes back on it.
What they should have done was use the counter, the guy that worked at the counter, have his hat accidentally knock off due to misdirection with him, and then still have the ending with the bus going into the thing and the alien come back to the cafe after that.
Well, yeah, but
then you wouldn't...
if he loses his hat, doesn't that end the story right there?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It'd be too early, so that's why he didn't, you know, he didn't know it till the very end to keep the story going. But you wouldn't have a confrontation between them, though, at the end. So, yeah.
Right. I think that's the only bad part about it. It's not a bad episode. Well, I agree with the person at IMDb who said it's... And I watched it twice for a reason, because I kept thinking to myself, why is it has everything a Twilight Zone episode should have? It's scary in a certain way, and it's kind of creepy. And especially at the end, it has a double twist ending. Well, I get on here often, and I say on certain stories, there's no surprise at the end. So it's got everything, but I wanted to come on the show today and say, you know what, I gave it a 3, but I changed my mind. It's a 4, it's a 5, but even though I'm sitting here right now, I still can't seem to go the rest of the way with it. It's just kind of an odd feeling. By the way, as far as product placement is concerned, you're right about the cigarettes, but there's something else in there too, and I didn't notice it, and I don't know if anybody else did, until somebody at IMDb in their review mentioned it. It goes by in about 3 seconds. Did you see the name on the bus when the bus pulls up? It says Cayuga. That's Rod Serling's production company.
Well,
it's called Cayuga
Bus Line. That's right. That's right. Oh, boy, I didn't even think about that.
Well, I didn't either. I saw only one person on IMDb said, by the way, there's product placement with the bus. But it goes by so fast. It goes by about 3 seconds. And you're not really ready to see it. It's got a kind of a little bit of everything in it. I just wish it would have been a little more suspenseful. There were so many hour-long episodes. The Sci-Fi Channel just the other day ran a mini-marathon of certain hour-long episodes from that season, and Lynn and I watched it. There was one in there that I like and one that Lynn likes, but most of them are horrible. And every time I see those episodes, I think to myself, you know, there are other stories I rather would have seen an hour. Seems like they just picked the wrong ones to make an hour. It's very bizarre. And I just think this should have been a little bit scarier, but it's a good story. It's a Twilight Zone story, and that's not always true. Sometimes you see stories in this series, and you'll wonder what they're doing on the Twilight Zone when they seem to be something else. But there's a lot to like here.
Felix agrees with you. Felix here agrees with you. He said it should have gone an hour or two.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, because I want to ratchet up the suspense a little. And generally, I don't favor that. I like tight stories that tell the story in minimum time, but I want time to get scared. I think it would have been a bigger surprise at the end to see who the alien or aliens really were after spending some time with these people, but I hardly know them at all. As far as trying to guess who the alien was from the little time there was, I could be a smartass by simply saying that I thought it was the blonde bimbo sitting back at the table, the one who was a stripper, even though she didn't say so.
Well, that's who I thought it was the very first time I ever saw the episode. That's what I said.
I thought she was an alien because she seemed to have bigger breasts than any woman on the planet Earth. She must be from another planet because it just didn't look right to me. But, I'll keep it at a 3, but I'm a little shocked that I do because that's not a very high rating for an episode that get so many good things said about it. It's just, not, I don't know, it's just, it's kind of strange. I can't think of any other episode that I feel that way about, but it's rather odd that it's that way. Another thing about it is the character actors in it, it's too much tongue-in-cheek. Don't do me this tongue-in-cheek business. Monsters of Dill Maple Street, when I saw that the first time when I was very young, I thought that was just a fabulous story because I can imagine people in my neighborhood going bananas and being out in the street shooting at each other. And it really scared the hell out of me. This one here just looks a little too amusing to be taken seriously. So even though it's kind of the same sort of story, I think they rather missed the boat on that and they could have done it better. So I'll stick with my 3, basically, and just say it's one of the better stories in the series. All right, Lynn, that's about it for me at the moment.
All right. And now... Dave, oh, I'm so glad you're back. Where is he? Dave.
The aliens got him.
Oh, no. Dave, you're back. Are you there?
Can you hear me? I just muted myself while I was coughing.
You
Sorry.
Scare me. I thought you were.
No,
glad you're back. I'm so glad you're back. Now it's your turn.
I agree with virtually all that's come before me. I would also give it a 3 out of 5. And I think it's certainly, I only give it a 3 because I think it was slightly disappointing. It started off with a very strong premise. Excuse me if I just stop off for a minute and cough because I'm just struggling a little bit. But
okay.
I thought the script was a little bit thin, and I think that's what the weakness of it. I mean, literally, they must have had one page of this script because within the first 5 minutes, they repeated. So, you know, there's 7 of us in the room and only 6 got off the bus. And then, excuse me, and then 2 minutes later, another couple says, yes, but there were only 6 of us on the bus and now there's 7. And, you know, that does get repeated. I agree with you all that the standout guy was the Jack Elam character. And I do remember him from Westerns particularly. The one I really remember him from was Once Upon a Time in the West, where he only had a small role, but that was a really great Charles Bronson. And, that had a fantastic star-studded cast with Henry Fonda and Gloria Cardinale and Jason Roberts, Charles Bronson. But he was one of the sort of bad guys waiting at the station for their boss to come. I think Charles Bronson, it was the bit where Charles Bronson's playing his harmonica and there's a train they're waiting for. Really stand out. So I do remember him as a cowboy. Looking up at Jack Elam, I found a quite nice little thing that it said here, Elam classified the stages of a moderately successful actor's life as defined in the way a film director refers to the actor during the course of their career. Stage 1 of your career, who is Jack Elam? Stage 2, get me Jack Elam. Stage 3, I want a Jack Elam type. Stage 4, I want a younger Jack Elam. Stage 5, who is Jack Elam? And basically, that's the character, the career of these character actors, and he certainly was a character actor. And he was a really standout character, although I do think that the chap who played the Martian, as it were, played a good part. Seen him in lots of things. He always plays the sophisticated chap. I do agree that the scene with where he comes out and he's lighting his cigarette, and almost before you realise it, you're watching 3 hands, and then you think, hang on a minute. And the 3 hands have been in view, well, at least to this dumb idiot, for at least sort of 10 or 15 seconds before you think, hang on a minute, he's got this in that hand and this in that hand, and he's got that in the... No, he's got that in this hand. And so it works extremely well. But I do think it was a little bit of a weak ending. I don't know what it is with the fact that they can't think outside our solar system, you know, with this Mars v. Venus business. And, of course, that threw me straight back to an episode about 8 to 10 ago, Mr. Dingle the Strong. Not so much the storyline of that, but if you remember, that was where we had the Martians that were like Tweedledum and Tweedledee, like a joint Martian. And when they'd finished experimenting, giving him his strength, it ended with the Martian coming in, and they were going to do experiments.
Oh, the Venus.
The Venus,
the little kids. They used the kids, yeah.
Yeah, but again, it was a Mars and Venus both coming to Earth and using as you know, Earth as their experiment. I mean, it seems a pity that I suppose it was the fact that the society of the day
they didn't think that maybe they didn't think that we could get past those two planets.
Yeah.
Like we wouldn't know from Jupiter or Neptune or anything like that.
Yeah, and I agreed again. This self-reference to one of the writers that books they adapted or stories they'd acted, you know, the Ray Bradbury reference. Of course, Ray Bradbury's most successful series is The Martian Chronicles. So that was a nice little connection there. I think I'm quite pleased that Robert brought up that, you know, the reference to the, you know, the fact that, you know, the chap didn't know what wet was and whatever. I think that was really well done in one sense, because it then explained why, you know, it wasn't a dripping wet character that had come in and you could immediately have spotted him. I think that's one of the reasons why they had the Jack Elam character at the bar, as it were, looking, not only looking crazy, but hunched up and look as though he's wrapped against the cold. Thank you, Lynn, for mentioning that it was the diner from, you know, 100 yards beyond the rim or whatever it was.
Yeah.
That's great. Great. The thing that I'm surprised with Robert, he hasn't drawn a parallel to Doctor Who episode. Of course, I would be annoyed with that. I thought he might have drawn a parallel to an episode called Midnight.
Night, yeah.
Right. Now, just to the people who are not in the room who are not familiar with Doctor Who, this is an episode where the Doctor, who usually travels with a companion, he's left his companion and he actually takes a break on what is the equivalent of a bus tour, like there was a bus in this. But in this case, the actual, instead of stopping off at a diner and that being the scene of the story, the actual whole story takes place as a bottle episode, as it were, actually on this bus when it gets stranded. And this is not really a bus, it's a caterpillar track vehicle crossing an alien world. And the whole premise of that is that amongst them is an alien within the bus. So in other words, not within the thing. Now, I've got a clip. I'm not too sure whether I should play it, Robert. Do you think I should or not? It's a little bit on the long side.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you'll have to listen to it for at least a minute before you'll understand why I've picked it to play. Here we go.
The headphones for channel 136.
Driver Joe at the wheel. There's been a diamond fall at the Winterwitch Canyon, so we'll be taking a slight detour, as you'll see on the map.
I do apologise, ladies and gentlemen, and variations thereupon. We seem to have had a failure of the entertainment system.
Oh.
What do we do?
We've got 4 hours of this. 4 hours of just sitting here.
Tell you what, we'll have to talk to each other instead.
No, I'm with this friend of mine, Donna. She stayed behind in the Leisure Palace. You?
No, it's just me.
Oh, I've done plenty of that. Travelling on my own.
The history is fascinating because there is no history. There's no life in this entire system. There couldn't be.
We're just experiencing a short delay. Perfectly routine, so if you could just stay in your seat.
What's the problem, Driver Joe?
We're stabilising the engine feet. Won't take long.
No, because that's the engine feet. That line there, it's fine.
No fault. Who are you?
Claude, I'm the mechanic.
We could stay breathing for 10 years.
What was that?
It must be the metal. We're cooling down.
What I want to know is how long do we have to sit here?
Is there something out there? Well,
let her out!
You can't say that. I'm sorry, but you said it yourself, Doctor. She is growing in strength.
That's not what I said.
I want to go home.
What do we say? Any minute now, the rescue truck is on its way.
What happens then, Doctor? If it takes that thing
back to the Leisure Palace, if that thing reaches civilization,
what if it spreads?
No, because when we get back to the base, I'll be there to contain it.
We haven't done much so far.
He's just standing at the back with the rest of us.
She's dangerous. It's my job to see that this vessel is safe. We should get rid of her.
Now, hang on. I think perhaps we're all going a little bit too far.
At last.
Thank you.
Two people are dead.
Don't make it a third. Jethro, what do you say?
Killing anyone?
Thank you.
He's just a boy.
What? So I didn't get a vote?
There isn't a vote. It's not happening, ever. Try to throw her out that door. You'll have to get past me first.
I said it was her.
Crusader 50 rescue vehicle coming alongside in 3 minutes. Door seal set to automatic.
And of course, that was a condensed version. There were bits happening between those speeches, But basically, this entity entered it and started to take over one of the passengers. So, and then, like you were saying, Lynn, in this story, you know, suddenly they were all turning on it, one another, saying, you know, I always suspected him and I never trusted that one and so on. And you
right.
get this sort of... so it very much had that feel I mean, I don't know whether Robert wants to come in on that before I just carry on a little bit more.
Well, I'll bring in that the actor who plays Jethro plays in the Merlin series. So he's a pretty good actor. I really like him. But yeah, it was compared to Monsters That Do on Maple Street, which is what basically we're all talking about today, where it's just another version of that. And I think that's probably why it slipped my mind with that, because I had it more. I think I might have mentioned it when we did Monsters That Do on Maple Street. But it's interesting how the monster moves on later on to somebody else. I'm going to say who. But they finally, you know, do solve the problem with the monster. But yeah, it was a pretty good episode. I remember Midnight. Wasn't too bad.
Okay, so as I say, I think this started off very strong. I think it was a little bit thin on the script. I think it rallied around somewhat when we had this scene at the bar with the two of them. But I was a little bit disappointed it was Mars v. Venus again. So I think to answer Bobby's question to the group, as it were, I think it did fail to me to be that memorable episode that it so easily could have been. And I think it's a pity. It's sort of a near miss rather than a resounding success. But I enjoyed it nonetheless. And while I've just got the microphone, as it were, I'm not going to try and cover all the episodes I missed. But I would just like to say that I actually enjoyed the previous episode you talked about a little bit better, the Mind and the Matter, because I thought the chap Shelley Berman, and I haven't listened back, by the way, to the recording of that one yet. I'm sorry, I haven't caught up with it. So I don't know whether I'm in concord with what you all thought. But I thought it was excellent. And the chap who played Archibald Beechcroft thought he gave it an absolute marvellous performance. He reminded me a lot of the chap from The Odd Couple.
The Jack Klugman character?
Jack Klugman. It was very much a Jack Klugman character, I thought.
So you thought that was an excellent episode?
I thought it was an excellent episode. I'd certainly give that 4.5, because it goes right back.
Wow.
Yeah.
Where were you with the counterpoint last time?
Why? Was it drummed with everybody?
Yep, definitely. You have to listen to it.
Well, I will do now, but I mean, I thought it was excellent in a way, because the whole point is how many curmudgeon-type people, you know, sour-faced and whatever, assume that it's everybody else and they're actually the only perfect person in the world, and if everybody else went away, that's what it... I thought it was a nice morality play in that sense. I thought the way that...
That's what I like. This is what I like, the fact that, you know, you're on the other end of the spectrum, and in a way I like that, you know, everybody doesn't always have to agree. I like the fact that you thought it was an excellent episode, and most of us hated it, but I like your perspective that you're giving it, you know, you're defending your reasons for why it was a good episode, and I like to hear that.
Well, I mean, the scene, I mean, it reminded me of the scene where we had the man in a small room, or a small man in a room, whatever, where the poor bloke $4 room, yeah, and he had to act against a mirror. And if you can remember all the way back to that, I was most appreciative of the guy's acting, because he's got to act. He's actually talking to us, the audience, but he's not got to act it in that sense. I mean, even the little breakfast scene in this one, The Mind and the Matter, where he's mulling over the book, he's making it. Perhaps I'm the sort of person that talks over my breakfast anyway, but to me, it seemed absolutely perfect that a person who lived on their own would actually, you know, have a little conversation with themselves over breakfast. And he was, yes, the book's right, and this, that, and the other. And then he starts off with something small, you know, getting rid of his landlady, banging on the door, and so on. And then we have this little the only friend he's really got in the office, the young guy, who then messes it up by keep spilling drinks on him. I thought, that was a thought-provoking episode. I mean, how many people must be next morning going on the tube to work thinking, no, you can't get rid of all these people. That's what life's about. Go on.
Okay. Dave, you forced me to bring my clip out for you, how I feel about the mind and the matter.
Okay.
No, sir. I didn't like it.
You had to listen to Mr. Horse in that last episode there.
Right, well...
Man, Ren and Stimpy.
I don't think I've got an answer to that one, I don't think.
Well, sir, but, I didn't like it at all.
I'm not saying it was a classic episode, but I think I preferred it certainly more than I did this. I would have given that a 4 out of 5.
Now, I don't blame you, Dave, because there are some in the reviews that I've done lately where I give some things some 4s and 5s that I got questioned on, especially the Passerby and some other ones that we'll review future on. So, yeah, you know.
Sure, everybody has favorites, and, you know, you might have a favorite that, you know, somebody else thinks is the one of the worst episodes, you know. And I, same with me. I mean, there's episodes that I really like that other people don't care for. And I like that. I like to hear the other ends of the spectrum where, you know, somebody, you know, an episode I hate, I want to hear why you like it. And you can bring something to light that I don't, you know, think about. And an episode that I like that you hate, you could tell me why you hate it, and maybe I'd think twice and say, well, you know, you're right about that. You know, I didn't think about that. So I do like to hear other ends. Yeah. I like to hear the other opinions.
I shall listen back to the recording very soon. I haven't watched the one from Shadow Play, but I was interested to try and catch that because it had Dennis Weaver in the part, so I think he's usually highly watchable, but I haven't got anything to say on that because I haven't watched that yet.
Okay. That's another episode that was not in wasn't very popular, but then again, there are people that love it. You know, I don't know. I mean, I think it goes, that's a 50-50 one. There's some people think it was outstanding and other people that are just not crazy about it at all, including me. But, you know.
Oh, well, I assume you'll be happy next week. You'll have Burgess Meredith back.
Oh, absolutely, yes. Yes, and that does bring me to that moment where I say that 2 weeks from now, on the 19th of November, right before a little before Thanksgiving, we'll be doing the last episode, the final episode of season 2, and that is and that is the
which ain't a bad yay. Actually, it's quite good yay. So looking forward to that.
Yay! And that is The Obsolete Man, starring the incomparable, fabulous, wonderful Burgess Meredith. And we will be doing that 2 weeks from today, November 19th. The Obsolete Man, Burgess Meredith. You gotta be here for Dave. You gotta be here for that one.
I hope to be.
You have to be here for that. You've got to be here for the last episode of season 2. You got to be here for Obsolete Man. I will be. Yes, Felix is even saying, yes, he loves it. Another great episode. Yes, you've got to be here because we need you here, Dave. That's an important episode, and you're very important to us. You must be
and
here.
And since we can't bring Alfred Hitchcock here because he's under. We'd like to have you here, Dave, because might do some Hitchcock talking during that.
Yeah, and I would be very sad, Dave, if you were not here in 2 weeks. Very sad. And it might come through in you know, my broadcast. It might come through my sadness, and you don't want that, do you?
Not he's waiting on, Dave.
No. So I do hope that Felix, you better be here too, Felix. I'm telling you, you better be here. Felix better be here. Dave better be here. Everybody has to be here for the last episode of season 2. Very, very, very special episode. So,
Lynn, before we go, I wanted to bring that news up about the new Twilight
oh,
Zone movie they're
yes,
working
yes,
on.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm so glad you reminded me. Yes. And Felix will be here for sure.
They got a director picked out called, his name is Matt Reeves. He was director of Cloverfield and the U.S. remake of Let the Right One In. Is in final talks to direct the new Twilight Zone movie. And he could be making it as soon as next summer, but it won't be what you might be expecting from a film adaptation of the TV series. And this is not on the movie that came out in the 80s, but this is on the TV series. So it'll
well,
be interesting.
Well, I'm not happy about this.
Well,
I'm
I got more.
Not
they
happy
also,
about
they also found a writer. So
now, who's the director
script,
again? I'm sorry. Say his name again, the director.
Reeve is
Reeve.
Is the director. Now they I found the person to do the script for the movie, and his name is Ran Radvich. He's to pen a script based upon the Twilight Zone TV series. His writing credits include The Astronaut's Wife, which he also directed, Candyman Farewell to the Flesh, and The Maker. He is perhaps best known for creating NBC's detective series Life. So, looks like they might have the director
that's
tied
not
up.
Good
and
enough.
Looks like they work on the squad.
Robert,
that's not
will you, Robert, will you put that together and post it on the board, please?
Sure.
Okay.
But that's not good enough, that writing credit. That's not good enough for the Twilight Zone. He doesn't have enough behind him, I'm sorry. He doesn't.
Well,
this writer,
I'm not disagreeing with you. Just,
this writer does not have enough behind him.
You know, it's going to eventually happen that they would, even though the success of the movie wasn't there for the last one. Maybe
yeah,
they feel that they could
to
do
have
better,
a better
on this.
Yeah, but I would
well,
expect
yeah.
to have a better writer and the director. I don't know, but the writer. No,
well,
that's
Christopher
not
Nolan would have worked out if he did get picked. He was in the running.
Yeah, I would have accepted that. I would have accepted that.
Yeah.
No, I'm not happy about this. I'll have to see the movie, and I'm sure that I'll be very disappointed. Because you just can't improve on perfection. I mean, you can't keep doing movies of the Twilight Zone. The Twilight Zone is what it is. It's, you know, I have no problem with people remaking things if it's really good, but you can't, I have not yet seen any remakes of the Twilight Zone that I can honestly say I am terribly impressed. And I am not. And the movie, the 1980s, 2000s, please. When are you going to give it up? You know, give it up. You can't do it. Stop already. Stop. But, you know, if they want to keep
well,
going.
Well, on the last show, you knew our takes on how we felt about it. If, like I said, if it was bad to begin with, and it does improve it, but if it don't, then it shouldn't
well,
be made.
We'll see, but I doubt it's going to improve it at all. But we'll see. All right. I'll give it the benefit of the doubt as much as I hate to. Anyway, so that's it for today. And unless anyone has anything else to add, does anyone have anything else to add? No. All right. So the 19th, Obsolete Man. Dave, you said, Rick Wall. He hasn't been here either. You and him have been like, disappearing here. Rick Wall.
Well, he's going to excuse his half Halloween, which is. His bread and butter time, I would have thought, doing his Harrow House.
Oh, I see. Well, see if you can get him here for the last episode.
If I see him in the Cultsome Collective, I'll mention it.
Yeah, see if he can be here for the Obsolete Man, because we would love to have everybody here for that. All right, great. Well, as long as we can see you all here, we'll see you then, and that's 2 weeks from now. And have a wonderful rest of the weekend. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.